from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. What was the most important story in your community or neighborhood in 2010? News is a subjective business. One person's front page story is another person's afterthought. And locally, this year had no shortage of headline-worthy events. The Giants won a World Series, San Bruno suffered a major disaster, and a record amount of money was spent on the election, just to name a few. But what was the year's most memorable story from where you sit? What story, event, or issue had the most impact on your life and on your community, however you define it? We'll also tell you how you can join our new Public Insight Network to help inform KQED reporters and editors. That's all coming up next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. With all the new methods and networks of communicating and sharing ideas, the notion of news and information coming directly from the public has become increasingly important, if not vital. And in this hour, we ask you, our listeners, to tell us what news story was the most important in your neighborhood or community or in the Bay Area, Northern California. What news story, in other words, from your point of view and individual vantage point, stands out as being especially memorable or most significant? And it may not even be a news story. It may be a development or something that the media has not covered. You can let us know what you choose and why, and you can do that by calling us or emailing us or posting your selection on our website right now. And let me tell you what our number is. It's toll-free, and it's available to you at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Email address, forum@kqed.org, and our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. And as the year comes to a close, we're going to open up the hour and find out what stories have had a lasting impact on your lives or stories that are developing that may look like they have that impact. But first, we're going to learn about a new initiative at KQED, and that's the reason why we're doing this open hour with listeners, because it brings into play the idea that listeners help us understand more about the news, that those of you who listen to this program or listen to public radio can actually help provide information that's vital to us. We're going to learn about a new initiative here at KQED, the Public Insight Network. It's a tool that actually taps into this great resource, the knowledge that's out there in the community to inform newsrooms, really not only here but across the country. And with us in studio is Amanda Stupai, who is a Public Insight Editor for KQED Public Radio. And Amanda, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael.
And also with us is Raul Ramirez, the jefe around here, Executive Director of News and Public Affairs for KQED Public Radio. Well, good to have you, Raul.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Let's find out first from Amanda about Public Insight and what it's all about. Give us kind of the rundown, could you?
There's a lot to say. Really, it expands what public broadcasting and public radio does well already. Especially, I think your listeners of Forum will know, public radio is really good at the personal narrative and really finding out what's happening on the ground with people. And this gives them more of a chance to speak to our newsroom directly and to help us find more of those stories.
How are they going to do that? Speak to the newsroom directly?
Well, they're going to sign up. They'll go to kqednews.org/public insight and they'll sign up and I'll look at what they tell us. My phone number is also there. And really, they'll be letting me know what stories they think we need to be covering. They'll let me know what they know about stories we already are covering. And I'm at that morning news meeting every day. And it's, I kind of like to think of it as a bat phone. You know, when they have something...
You're not in your cave, though.
I'm not in the cave, no. Well, although the newsroom sometimes is compared to the cave. But when they need to get something across, that's how they can reach us.
And the fact of the matter is that they don't have to be great experts or highly educated or... I mean, they were talking about really just regular folks out there, too.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people think, you know, we just want to hear from rocket scientists. We want the people sitting on the rocket. We want the guy who's piloting the rocket. We want the person who made the widgets that are holding the rocket together. And we want
hearing the noise from the rocket and doesn't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Or the person who has a story that we're not noticing because we're watching, you know, this launch. So everybody, the more the better.
And Amanda Stupai, again, is Public Insight Editor for KQED Public Radio. Raul Ramirez is our Executive Director of News and Public Affairs. Why have we joined in this partnership, Raul?
Well, we have joined the Public Insight Journalism Practice and the Public Insight Network as a means to find new resources to help us reach deeply into the communities that we're supposed to be covering. We, particularly in public broadcasting, but news media in general, do a pretty good job of tapping into the expertise that is highly visible in our communities, the political expertise, the business expertise, the academic expertise, the public relations leverage knowledge that is out there. What we don't do a very good job of is really actually getting to individuals who live in our communities who have a great deal of expertise in all of those things, but also in about their communities and their lives. The public insight journalism is about attempting to tap into that expertise by finding ways to communicate and hear from people in our communities. The Public Insight Network, which is what we're talking about today, is a tool that was developed by American Public Media a number of years ago, and it's essentially a national and local database. It's a database that is put together by asking individuals, as we are doing today. Anyone who's hearing our voices today can consider yourselves to have been asked by us to go to our website, to kqednews.org, and Amanda will be able to tell us the precise place on the site where they can go and share with us a little bit of information about the expertise that they have. This is information that will be kept in a database that will not be used for marketing, would not be used for any kind of advertising, will not be used to be given to anyone other than to be potentially shared with our journalists and occasionally with journalists from the other news organizations that belong to the Public Insight Network. Essentially, once you sign up and give us a little bit of information about the expertise that you have and your life, we're able to look at Amanda, as he was saying, with a bad phone and so on, is able to look at that database and be able to tell our journalists how they can further expand their avenues of inquiry. You, as a person who signs up for the Public Insight Network, would receive a query, mostly email queries, unless you indicate otherwise, and where we say, are you able and interested in talking to us or to a reporter or to answering some questions about something that you have indicated you have some expertise on or something that relates to your demographic reality? That is, if you're a single dad with two children, it may be that what we're exploring has to do with education and parents, and we may be asking you, are you able and willing to talk to us or to talk to a reporter about the challenges that you face, the resources that you find, the way you go about living your life and taking care of your home situation, that kind of thing.
Everybody becomes a source then of potential news and information, but there are also people who are presumably going to want to join and maybe give some whistleblowing information or information that would demand confidentiality.
Absolutely. And, you know, privacy is paramount to this program. Everyone who has access to the information goes through training with American Public Media. And in our newsroom, there's only a couple of us who do have access to this. And that's the same for the newsrooms across the country who use it. So it's a very select group of folks who have access to this information. So it really is a confidential, safe way for people to share information with us.
Well, Amanda, you mentioned American Public Radio and American Public Media, and Joaquin Alvarado is Senior Vice President for Digital Innovation with American Public Media. He joins us this morning by phone. And Joaquin, welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Well, since we're talking about confidentiality, how can you ensure it?
Well, the technology that supports the network protects it as a matter of the rule setting for how partners interact with the sources in the network. That also provides a layer of protection. And then we do a lot of diligence to make sure that there's no compromises around that. We have some of the top investigative journalism organizations in the network now. Recently, the Center for Investigative Reporting joined. Center for Public Integrity is a member, and ProPublica are also members. So we spend a lot of time ensuring that privacy is protected and also creating opportunities for folks who do have important and highly sensitive information to share. We've created a platform that allows them to do that in a way that respects all of the important requirements for the working journalists who might do something with that information.
And let's talk about American Public Media, because it's a big operation. In fact, reaches probably literally millions of people. Has, in fact, ties to and integral connections to Minnesota Public Radio and to radio throughout the Northwest, but also produces Marketplace, which, of course, is here heard here on KQED. What do you do to get people really enticed in becoming involved in this? I mean, part of it is certainly active and good citizenship, but what else do you have to tell people to say, you know, what's in it, who say, what's in it for me?
Well, surprisingly, given our roots with Minnesota Public Radio, where we launched this thing, our listeners who joined wanted to take some responsibility for helping to improve the journalism that we were capable of. And that's been an important theme in all of our partnerships around public insight. Southern California Public Radio was also in the American Public Media Group. And their newsroom has taken it on and done some really important work reporting on the state prisons in California. And a number of other issues that are really specific to Southern California. So we really try to respect the intelligence of our audience, and we also try to go out and in-person engage folks who maybe are not in our normal listening domain. We're trying to diversify the sources that come in, not just within public radio, but also beyond that. So we do a number of things online. We do a number of direct engagements. If we feel like we have the opportunity to do some listening in communities that we don't typically have access to, we have a team that is actually focused on engaging and finding those opportunities and going after them.
What do you envision as the public impact here? Maybe you can give us some examples, in fact, of what has occurred.
Well, there's just a fabulous story. I mentioned Southern California Public Radio. They did a four-part multimedia series and a series of reports on the Chino State Prison riot and the conditions that led up to it, what happened during the riot, and what happened in the immediate aftermath. And one of the sources who was in the network and raised their hand to say there's an important story that's not getting enough coverage here won the Society for Professional Journalism's Sunshine Award this year. So that was a really great example. Oregon Public Broadcasting won the Peabody for their recession reporting that looked at the lives of people throughout the state of Oregon who were impacted by different parts of the recession, and they pulled a number of those folks out of the network to participate in that series. So I think that it gives us a depth that is hard to get to otherwise, because there's a heavy deadline schedule for a lot of reporters where they don't have a chance to necessarily get the time to do all of the legwork that they would like to have. So we help to make that easier, but also the diversity of the sources is another important feature of this that I feel like we're really helping to solve for our partners.
Again, Joaquin Alvarado is Senior Vice President for Digital Information with American Public Media, and Raul Ramirez is Executive Director in News and Public Affairs here at KQED. And Raul, we're sort of expanding and enhancing traditional journalism here, but we're also creating a new kind of lay journalism, aren't we?
Well, you know, it's funny. We are expanding and enhancing, but at the same time, we're going back to the roots of journalism. When you had a newspaper editor who would walk down Main Street in their smaller town and know people in their neighborhoods and know their expertise and their lives, in a sense, as we become part of larger and larger cities and regions, we lose that. So that we at KQED, for example, sitting in a newsroom in San Francisco with bureaus in various parts of the state, but we really sometimes are not able to see into the communities right, sometimes virtually outside our doors. So in many ways, what public insight journalism practices and the Public Insight Network will enable us to do, to the extent that we're able to succeed in attracting people to share their information with us, and that is to let us know that they're there, is to really be able to assess the impact of trends and patterns that normally we have to wait for colleges and universities and other researchers to tell us about. Instead, we're able to more directly hear from the public, from people who are affected by trends. So this is a tool that we can use to both query people, but also people can use to reach us and give us a heads up when they feel that our coverage is lacking something. ultimately, what this all does is really to enrich the coverage that we're able to bring to our air and to our KQED.org, KQEDnews.org website, because it expands the demographic range of sources we have. And we all know that the more voices that you have, the wider the range of voices, the more perspectives that you have in the research and telling of stories, the more accurate the picture that eventually is going to emerge.
And Amanda Stupai, again, is Public Insight Editor for KQED Public Radio. People can get involved. How, again, Amanda?
Sign up. If they just go to kqednews.org/public insight, they'll find an online sign-up form. We also have some queries that we've already written. If those appeal to folks, they can fill those out as well. And I'm also speaking, Joaquin was speaking to the diversity and trying to reach new audiences. I would really like to challenge the people who are listening to not only sign up themselves, but send this to somebody who doesn't listen to KQED. Let's not just hear from...
It's going to be hard to find those people.
This is true. This is true. But bring a friend along. You know, post this on your Facebook page. Let people know that this is happening. We really do want to hear from everybody. You know, from Sonoma to Salinas to Santa Clara. Tell us what's happening where you live.
And you can join KQED's Public Insight Network by visiting kqednews.org, and that's /public insight. Thank you all for being here with us and sort of unveiling this news, which is exciting and certainly challenging to our community. And again, tapping into the community is exactly what we're going to do for the rest of this hour. I had said at the beginning of the hour that I want to find out from you, our listeners, what you think is really the most memorable or significant or important news story or a developing story, a story that you think is certainly of note in your community, in your neighborhood, in your part of the world, from your vantage point. You can do that, in fact, by simply joining us again, toll-free 866-733-6786, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or simply sending us a message through our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You all want to stay here and hear what the listeners have to say as we
always
begin this process?
Sure.
Joaquin, you want to stay with us? Can you too as well?
I would love to.
All right. We'll say goodbye to all of you in the break, and we'll hear what our listeners have to say before we go to the break. And this is Rod first from Cupertino. Good morning.
Good morning. The most significant story out of Cupertino this year is one that's just happened recently. New EPA regulations on air emissions from cement plants were released in August, and they're scheduled to take effect in 2013. Among other pollutants, this will, for the first time, control the amount of mercury put into the air and burning the limestone to make cement. The EPA weighed and studied this for nearly a decade and found that there was a great economic benefit to citizens' health that greatly more than offset implementation by industry. Now, here in Cupertino, we have a cement plant that's been in operation for about 100 years, making about half of the Bay Area cement by the plant's estimates. But for decades, and they've been putting out roughly an order of magnitude 10 times more mercury than the new EPA regulations will allow.
How much has this been covered in your community, Rod?
There have been a lot of local residents at notoxicair.org. There's a lot of information. At Quarry No, another organization, there's information. But essentially, this is tucked away in the hills of Cupertino. If you fly into San Jose, you can readily see this 3-mile-long plant. But what's become a perfect storm here is that the cement plant has been dumping illegally, received notices of violation with no fines from the county of Santa Clara, and now has applied to open a brand new pit, which will double the amount of open pit mining that they're doing here.
This is a really good way to begin here, and thank you so much, Rod, for that call. Amanda, I mean, this is really what you're looking for, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and, you know, I would love, I'd love to be able to follow up, and so please go to kqednews.org/public insight. Leave a way for me to get in touch with you.
Let me get in touch with some more of our listeners. Pete joins us next. Hi, Pete. You're on.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I'm calling about the destruction of the San Francisco Recreation and Park Department. It's a local story, and it's something that I haven't really seen much of in the papers. Effectively, large numbers, dozens of people have been laid off, and they're in the process of privatizing a system that was renovated at a great expense, public expense. Neighborhood playgrounds are being leased to private organizations, and there seems to be a large-scale campaign to turn over public places to private organizations as a kind of payoff for public support of our outgoing mayor and his statewide political ambitions.
Well, Pete, it sounds like you too should sign up with Public Insight. I mean, this is, again, it seems to me, Raul, a really good example of what you're looking for.
It is an excellent example, and this is how you begin to build not only a broader knowledge of the community, but the individuals who have the interest in sharing their stories.
And we thank Pete for the call, and we get Roger on next. Roger, join us.
Yes, thank you very much, Michael. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all your listeners. There's something that I've been involved with for years, and it's starting to move ahead in this past year. In February, the board approved installing a suicide barrier on the Golden Gate Bridge. In July, $5 million from the federal government was set aside for the engineering. And I think it's moving ahead, and it probably will be installed. Unfortunately, we've hit this recession where the money is very tight, and it's going to cost $45 million to actually install the mesh screen under, so it's not going to obstruct anybody's view from the bridge, but it's going to be underneath, so if anybody jumping will fall into this screen, and they'll be retrieved.
Now, the whole controversy over the Golden Gate Bridge barrier, of course, has been an ongoing story for years now. And I'm just wondering, Roger, and I thank you for bringing it up, what Joaquin Alvarado, using that as an example, what actually those in the community or neighborhood can, I suppose, help make what newsrooms even more acutely aware or more astute about what's going on?
Absolutely. I think particularly to go back to the parks example, that's an opportunity for us to have community members share the exact impact that this privatization, if that's what's occurring, is having in their communities, to also look at how some of these decisions are being made. So there are folks somewhere in that decision chain that is moving in this direction who would be able to share with journalists wanting to cover that story. We've also used the network to do special features that are either on air or on the web that can go at an issue over time and have folks contribute directly to that. So each of these in their own way represents a part of what Public Insight was developed to accomplish, which is a way for these issues to be raised, number one, and then number two, for folks to contribute to the information at the disposal of a journalist who can do something with it.
Coming up on a break here, Raul Ramirez, you want to say something about the process?
Just a quick point. I think what we're hearing now is really the kind of process that will go on offline, that is off air, in the future. What will happen is the information we receive from Rod, for example, is something that we would look at and assess and do, you know, good old-fashioned journalism that looks at the background and speaks to more people and so on. But what he has done is bring us another window into the situation in Cupertino, which we are aware of. We have heard about the public debate over this particular topic. But again, this gives us the opportunity to look through other windows, to verify, to report. And
to talk to him. On air.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Eventually. Yeah.
So this becomes, I like your word window, this becomes a real portal into our communities and the local nature of news becomes even greater in terms of what we can see and what we can hear.
Yes. And like I said, it expands what public broadcasting does well. It strengthens it.
Well, thank you all for being with us. Exciting project. Best of luck to all of you. Joaquin Alvarado, again, is Senior Vice President for Digital Innovation with American Public Media. Amanda Stupai, Public Insight Editor for KQED Public Radio. And Raul Ramirez, Executive Director for News and Public Affairs with KQED Public Radio. And you can join KQED's Public Insight Network, again, by visiting kqed.org/public insight. And I hope you do. We are going to a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear more of your calls about what you think was the most memorable or significant story of the year, or something that is a developing story. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, we gave you some insight into what's going on here with Public Insight, and you can actually join, again, KQED's Public Insight Network by visiting kqednews.org www.cuprtino.org/public-insight. And we're sort of, demonstrating exactly what it is this morning by tapping into you, the public, by asking you the question, simply what was the most important or significant, most memorable story of the year, news story in your community, in your neighborhood. And you can certainly bring in, as many have and are doing, developing stories or stories that are on the way to be developing. This is a really extraordinary opportunity for you, that is, Public Insight is an extraordinary opportunity for you to actually make a difference and make impact on the news and become a part of really what is often called citizen journalism. Now, we'd like to hear what your thoughts are in terms of stories. And so, as once again, to reiterate, we're tapping into you as our sources. Let's go to Sacramento. And Mark, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Well, thanks for this opportunity. We're working with organizations here relating to homeless people, and we call it Safe Ground because we're trying to get the city to designate an area where homeless people can be and leave their stuff and go deal with other issues while they're trying to get housing and work, reunite with families. And
That's been ongoing up there in Sacramento.
It's been ongoing for over a year now, ever since we had Tent City behind Blue Diamond and Oprah Winfrey came out and gave us some national coverage. But the problem is we haven't gotten any area, and we have hundreds of people who are living illegally because it's illegal to be on public or private property as a camper in the city. We have hundreds of people living illegally on and near the levees by the Sacramento and American Rivers on the American River Parkway, and with the rising water levels now, some of the camps have been flooded out, and it's just a desperate situation. Churches are stepping up and trying to help with overnight stays to keep people warm, but it's really critical, and we've been pulling our hair out trying to get the city just to agree to back off and let people stay even on private property, just to pitch tents so they can stay out of the rain. That's the situation that's been going on here. We keep struggling for it, struggling to get Safe Ground, but I'm not too optimistic that the city fathers and mothers are going to see it our way.
Well, onward with the struggle, and I think what you've done is brought it once again to public attention, which can be quite valuable, and that's exactly what we're trying to do here this morning in terms of bringing Public Insight Network to your attention. And I thank you for the call, Mark. Let me get some more callers on. We're going to go to San Jose next and welcome Pam. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, welcome.
I would like to bring up the issue of education, which is so important for all the parents. This is specifically about Eastside Union High School District, where there are a lot of deeply rooted financial corruption issues, political issues, and also the same issues going on in the community colleges in that area, which is really impacting the quality of education. To the students, the parents, and the whole community.
How well is it being covered, Pam, in your local media?
San Jose Mercury News did quite a good job of covering it on and off. So I would like to credit them. They may not have that much of reach in the minority communities, where they may really might be really having a bigger impact. So I think that needs to be covered and empower parents and people so that they can take on these issues head on. And I don't think it's an easy issue, but, we need to discuss that and see what we can do to improve that.
Well, good luck with the improvement, and thank you again for bringing this to our attention. Again, finding out from listeners, what needs attention, but also what has your attention within your neighborhood or community, and what is most important to you in terms of a news story over the course of this past year, or what news story is developing along those lines. Let me go to more of your calls. We'll go to Mill Valley, and Ken, welcome. You're on.
Thank you very much for taking the call. Even though I live in Mill Valley, I think one of the most compelling stories I've heard this year is the corruption of the Atherton police. There had been a lot of coverage on the Almanac News. However, there had been talks about the police asking and receiving donations from residents, and also there was a case of arrest of one of the residents and the police record being falsified. And now that's now leading to a federal civil rights lawsuit. And also there was even a case of elder abuse that the police refused to investigate, even though the former police chief was considered himself a friend of this elder, an elderly woman, widow, who was financially abused by her banker. I think that, you know, there's so much that the local media, such as Almanac News, can do to really communicate this. However, you know, I think there's a sort of sense of outrage that how, you know, in the 21st century, we have the 19th century corruption that's really affecting the lives of the residents.
I'm not familiar with all of these events in Atherton. Has there been proceedings against the police or against those who are culpable here that you mentioned?
The falsification police record, I think this victim, the resident who is a victim, he received a factual innocence in San Mateo court, which is a pretty rare occurrence. And during the proceedings, one of the police officers has admitted under oath that the police record that he entered had been tampered with later. And most recently, this victim had identified the actual police officer who illegally falsified the record. However, the response from the Atherton police was that they hired a quote-unquote outside investigator who was a retired police officer from Oakland. And I think it will be just to whitewash the whole situation, because certainly the felony was committed by a police officer and this gentleman's civil rights was violated.
Well, Ken, thanks for bringing this up. I'm going to have to familiarize myself more with this, and I appreciate your calling it to our attention here. In fact, here's Dave in San Mateo who writes, "This is a great idea. I would much rather hear from local experts rather than think tank talking heads who are paid to defend a certain opinion. Let's get actual workers as sources rather than propagandists." That's just in response to the whole public insight idea. And as far as important stories or newsworthy stories, here's Michael from Berkeley who says, "I think the potential new ballpark in Oakland for the A's is a very important story and something that I have been covering in depth with my blog." Nice plug for his blog, White Elephant Parade. "Great idea with public insight. I have signed up already." And as I said, you too can sign up, kqednews.org/public insight. You can also join us by phone here, toll free at 866-733-6786 if you have something to add, or put it on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Here's a listener who writes, "Healthcare topic, an old but innovative approach to healthcare. Doctors making house calls. Local Bay Area doctor, Lorraine Page, a much beloved, respected member of the Coastside communities, is re-envisioning a way to administer healthcare by coming to your door." There's a splendid example of a story that comes out of, in fact, I think we had Lorraine Page on a number of years ago. It comes out of those of you who are listening. Let's hear from some more of you. Peter is next. You're on.
Yes, hi. It's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association.
Well, hi, Peter Warfield.
The libraries, unfortunately, have gotten scant to no coverage in San Francisco and Berkeley in the mainstream papers. And what's happening in Berkeley, as an example, is Measure FF, which passed in 2008, was supposed to provide up to $26 million to renovate and expand branches. So what's happening is, after the measure passed, they decided to tear down, demolish two of them, and replace them with new buildings. So that's a big change for what compared with what was voted for. Other things that are happening in Berkeley, the books are being massively cut in one branch and given tiny increases in other branches that are getting huge increases in floor space. So there's either both a book cut and a book de-emphasis happening there. Also, reference desks as separate facilities are going to be not separate from the circulation desk or kids and adults from each other. And there's a whole range of changes that are being brought in with the architecture.
I'm afraid the news all over for libraries is not really all that good, although there have been a few parcel taxes. I know there was one in Marin, for example, that gives libraries more revenue. But for the most part, it's been tough.
Well, in some places, yes. But in San Francisco and Berkeley, voters and citizens have been very generous with funding for what they would like as better libraries. And unfortunately, there have been things happening. For example, in San Francisco, two Appleton and Wolford libraries that were scheduled for renovations are also slated for demolition. One was already demolished, and the North Beach branch is planned for demolition with replacement by a new branch as well. And within, again, those changes, there are architecture is being, in some respects, used to change the way that the libraries are going to be functioning. So, for example, the reduction or the elimination of separate reference desks, the de-emphasis on books. These are issues that unfortunately, have not been well covered by certainly the mainstream press.
Other significant issues. And, Peter, thank you so much for bringing them once again to public attention. Peter Warfield has been involved as a library activist. That's really what he is. We go to more of your calls here, and we got Chris on from Mountain View. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Michael. How are you today?
Doing okay.
Thanks for taking the call. I've spoken with you previously on international, but specifically today, I'm more concerned about 2011 and what's occurring with climate change and the resultant sea level rise that is expected in the next 10 to 15 years. And the study group that I have spoken with in the past have been saying, well, we need to move 22 hospitals and 15 schools. And I mean, it's in the billions and billions of dollars. And I'm very, very concerned about, you know, where that kind of funding would come from as a result of this.
Well, it's a big question, and it's certainly on many people's minds, and I'm glad you brought it up, and thank you for it, Chris. Some of these questions are just so overwhelming almost and staggering that are being raised in these stories that you are bringing to our attention here this hour, understandably so. Let me go to our next caller, and that's Daga, calling us from Walnut Creek. Good morning. Oops. Go ahead, Doug.
My story is around the illegal trust station that's taking more and more coverage across the Bay Area. Some attention was given in the San Francisco area, but we are missing the bigger picture where this impacts all the communities across the Bay Area. The people who work in this industry are also exploited in many ways. Many of them are foreign tourists who come in and stay in economy hotels for long durations. And then they simply be there for some time, deal in cash, make a difficult life for people who are staying in those hotels. And it's been my personal experience on two occasions where I, by chance, I had a room next to one of those rooms, and it gets really, really horrible.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Daga. The sex trafficking is sort of something we've looked at on forum, and the exploitation of both women as well as young boys and men, particularly immigrants, has been ongoing and has certainly been a problem with just about every community here in the Bay Area. Let me go to more of your calls, and we go to Sam in Oakland. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Michael. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. It's a pleasure to be on the show. On a personal level, this is top stories of 2010.
Yeah.
Personal level, producing a late-night variety show, thevarietysociety.com. We're bringing variety back to late night from the city by the bay. But the Giants winning the pennant was great, especially to be on the Fox crew, so shout-out to all the hardworking camera guys there.
Giants winning the pennant. How about the Giants winning World Series?
Yes, and the World Series as well. Sorry. Got a little mixed up with words, but and Oakland's bid versus, I think, the city politics between Oakland and San Jose vying for the stadium is big. But on a political level, when the midterm elections all went Republican, California stood strong. We held our ground. We kept them. We got a new positive governor in the statehood. I think I'm really excited for the coming year and what he's going to bring to the table. And of course, Carly Fiorina not winning and Meg Whitman really just going down in a ball of flames. I think that's, no offense to Republicans out there, but I think it's going to be a good positive year for California.
Well, certainly a big story for the year and the midterm election. Thank you for the call, Sam. You can add your voice here, by the way, in terms of a suggestion for most memorable story of the year or a story that's in development that you want to add to our knowledge. Toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. You can join us in the time remaining, also by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And here are a couple of emails. Al writes, hello to Michael and Raul. I have a story that may be of interest to a wide audience. Community volunteering. I currently volunteer at the John Muir Hospitals in Walnut Creek and Concord, where volunteering is far more involved than the traditional view that hospital volunteers are candy stripers, delivering books and magazines to patients. Not to diminish the importance of that benefit, today's volunteers perform a very wide range of services and support to the hospital staff and patients. Hospital volunteering has developed into a specialized set of skills that address specific hospital and patient needs. For example, as a former heart patient, I visit with patients undergoing major heart surgery, offering support and the kind of information that one who has undergone the procedure can offer. David writes, big story, education. The budget cuts in schools have been terrible, and the effects are being felt currently and will be felt for years to come. Some schools are only holding on because they're benefiting from court-ordered payments from the state in the form of Quality Education Investment Act. The media could do more to report on how the Quality Education Investment Act is helping schools succeed through cooperative efforts with the California Teachers Association. Instead, we find the media focused on teachers' unions as obstacles. Meanwhile, with the whole nation in a state of anxiety about the economy, teachers are becoming scapegoats for all the problems of the schools. Cecile writes, in West Santa Rosa, we see people who have been turned away from the homeless shelters because of inebriation or being under the influence and aggressive and going back to the streets. They have been living along our bike trails through West Sonoma County and setting up tents. Gail writes, local stories for 2010 for San Rafael. One, developing program to teach disability history in Marin County Public Schools. Very exciting for students with disability and their parents. Two, ongoing discussion of approving a new Target store on the San Rafael waterfront. Classic conflict. Development would require amendment to our general plan. EIR shows four unmitigatable detrimental impacts. Target offers jobs and tax revenue but cannot guarantee either one. That's, again, a very good example of a local community and the effect of an ongoing story. But we're asking you not only about ongoing stories, we're asking you about to look back on the year in your neighborhood and from your perspective and your community, what story has had the most resonance. Let me go to Concord. Susan, welcome. You're on.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My personal story revolves around illness. I would like to see a lot more research done into the causes and just dissemination of information about chronic fatigue syndrome. And there was a big story in 2010 about a new association with a possible retroviral cause, and I haven't heard it covered at all on my local stations.
You know, you raise a very interesting point, Susan, because there was a time when chronic fatigue syndrome was getting an immense amount of space in newspapers and time on radio and television and attention in general, and it's almost declined to being off the radar screen.
And this year was an enormous year. As a matter of fact, last week we finally gotten an advisement that people with this illness should not donate blood for the first time since I've been sick for 33 years. So for the first time, we've finally been advised that maybe there's something contagious that you shouldn't donate blood. And that would be a wise precaution to take not only for the patient but for the other people. And believe me, nobody ever thinks they're going to get this. And when they get it, they can't get rid of it, and it ruins your normal concept of life. And nobody wants to get this.
Well, I'm sorry you're suffering, and I hope that you find something to ameliorate or get rid of that, and I thank you for calling. We'll go to another call. We'll go to Sebastopol and welcome Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a farmer up here in Sebastopol, and we are all across California. We're actually facing an issue where the state government and national government is cracking down on volunteers and interns on farms. Many farmers rely on volunteers, many small farmers rely on volunteers to help them get their produce to market. And many people want to learn how to farm through volunteering opportunities. And according to the laws, if anybody does work that is for a for-profit business, they must be justly compensated. And I can understand that law. It does support the minimum wage. It's good. But there are so many people who are desperate to volunteer on a farm, and they're now being turned away. And that includes, like, aunts and uncles and sisters and brothers who are illegal to work on a farm. And I know farms in Marin and Sonoma County that have been fined for having their extended family even work on their farm, much less volunteers and interns.
If you're a farmer in Sebastopol, I can understand why that's a big story to you. And I thank you for calling it in, Paul. I appreciate your hearing from you this morning. And again, if you'd like to join us in the time remaining, it's on the phone. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Bradley, you're up next. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to talk about another angle of the North Beach Library issue from the planning department perspective, because, you know, through the process, the fact that the proposed library that they want to substitute for the Appleton and Wolford branch that you heard about a little while ago, they're going to project the building into Mason Street and block one of our historic views down Mason Street to Angel Island in the Bay from the heart of North Beach. And it's really been suppressed. The EIR has been actually falsified on how far it goes out into the street. And it's kind of an outrageous development.
How do you know it's been falsified?
Well, it's a third of the way across the street, and the drawings show it. And, in fact, they the drawings show it only just on sidewalk, which the sidewalk is not a third of the right-of-way. And it's been reviewed by architects. Howard Wong, a retired city architect, has confirmed this. There's been other independent voices. And instead, the planning department, is just trying to uphold this EIR, this draft EIR. It's the kind of thing that's been going on with planning right now, pro-development, even to the point of risking something as sacred to all San Franciscan and Bay Area residents of our historic 165-year-old views, of the Bay from the heart of North Beach. So, there's a certain crisis going on in planning. Perhaps something of that sex scandal in the summer might have had something to do with where employees are terrified because of a sex question. It went way beyond that. A lot of people were just fired and demoralized. People's home movies of a carnival at Brazil was used as alleged sexual misuse of the communication systems, and they were let go. And so there's this real crisis right now in planning that's outrageous. It's not getting any kind of coverage in the San Francisco press. The mass disinformation dailies, you don't see any of it. And there's no discussion of anything outside. And you can see it when you look at the coverage. The North Beach Branch Library was shown as just the same blank wall over and over in both the Chronicle and the Examiner and other papers, instead of, a real sort of discussion about the building.
Well, Bradley, thank you for that, for bringing that to our attention. Appreciate hearing from you this morning. And just hearing from you as many of you as we can. We'll go next to Bill in Daly City. Welcome, Bill.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to bring up the animal welfare landmarks that occurred this year in San Francisco, particularly the passage by the Board of Supervisors of a declawing ordinance that it's now illegal for vets in the city to declaw cats, which is a horribly disfiguring and painful procedure and totally unnecessary. And on the other end, the failure of the Animal Commission and basically the city to pass a no-kill ordinance in San Francisco, even though it's required by state law.
Yeah, the declawing thing was a big deal for many people, especially animal rights people. And Bill, thanks for bringing it up. I want to get another caller on from Alameda. Denise, hi.
Yes, hi. I'd like to tell you about something I discovered on October 1st. It was the county emergency medical services maintained a substandard protocol for stroke transports in the city of Alameda. What I discovered is that in our city, instead of going to a certified stroke center, we were being transported, if we were stroke victims, to our local hospital. It's been basically a 30-year cabal, I will call it, that's been securing acute victims for the hospital to maintain revenues. The federal and state standards require us to be taken to certified stroke centers where they have the disease and technology expertise to deal with stroke victims and reverse or protect our brains in the first 8 hours. So I wrote an op-ed. It got exposed. The city mayor, Beverly Johnson, picked it up, talked about it in a city council meeting. And on December 1st, the stroke protocol was changed. Now, in a city of 70 to 80,000 people, we have, on average, 500 stroke victims per year. These victims get taken off island to certified stroke centers now.
Good to hear. Thank you for the call. In fact, we heard earlier about the cement plant in Cupertino, and Paula has some light to shed on that. Paula, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be on your show. I love it. But tonight, angry residents are going to the city council, the Cupertino City Council in Torrey Avenue, to demand that our city take action against this expansion plan, to pass a resolution to send on to the county to make sure that the county knows that the city of Cupertino is standing up to Lehi and to the lack of action by our regulatory agencies on these issues. So, you know, we'd invite everybody in the city to come and show up.
Well,
we hope to fill the council chambers tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. And I'm glad you called because it shows how this can just evolve. I mean, how citizen action can take place and then more news is brought forth, as it was in that last call. Let me get Jean on here from Redwood City. Hi, Jean.
Hi, it's Jean from Redwood City.
Yeah, welcome.
I'm calling about the David Lewis murder story. He was a major leader in East Palo Alto, and we just found out that his alleged murderer was caught. But it was a big story in the community.
It was a big story indeed, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. I mean, thank you all for this hour of really important stories that are developing or important stories as you look back on the year from, I almost said your hood, from your neighborhood, from your community, from where you live, and also from just the perspective of Northern California in general. Here's Zoe, who writes, congratulations on your new local coverage citizen reporter's idea. Local news for years has been reduced by the overwhelming size of national and international events and problems. However, our sense of community becomes decreased this way. We don't hear about what our neighbors, countywide and in town, are dealing with, so we don't know them or their lives. Democracy is a grassroots business always. To know about each other is to care about each other and to have our wills for good and imagination stirred by what our neighbors face on their own behalf and ours as well. Thank you for this effort. I look forward to hearing more real and in-depth local news. And so it gives me an opportunity again to plug the Public Insight Network simply by visiting kqednews.org/public insight. And, of course, you can always visit our website, kqed.org, or you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on forum by going to kqed.org. Or calling our listener call-in response line at 415-553-3300. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion, in fact, if you'd like, of memorable stories over the course of the year or stories that are in development by going to our website. And again, that's kqed.org. We'll be back with you on tomorrow if all goes according to plan. I want to thank Senior Editor Dan Zoll and also our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.